What I have learned and done in my past lives and in this lifetime, is what I have become. This is the secret of what karma really is. But Master Thwap, I still don't understand the difference between karmic fate and free will. Wasn't it your karma to meet your past life master, and to regain your enlightenment, because of the fact that you have been enlightened in your previous lifetimes? Yes, that is true, he replied. But it was through the exercise of my free will in the first place that I began the study of meditation. That, and other choices I made to follow and stay on the pathway to enlightenment, led to my first enlightened incarnation, and also to my subsequent enlightened incarnations. You see, he continued, free will exists and operates outside causality. It is not hooked to karma. Free will is like a well that is on your property. You can choose to draw water from the well or not. That is up to you. The well will still be there, whether or not you choose to use it. Free will exists within each of us, Master Thwap stated factually. Most people choose not to use their free will, so consequently they rarely alter their karmic patterns. For most individuals, each new lifetime is a mirror image of the individual's previous incarnation, Master Thwap explained. But if you choose to draw from the inner well of free will, then you can make choices that are outside your current karmic patterns. You can alter the structure of your samskaras, and of your current and future incarnations, Master Thwap said emphatically. By choosing to use your free will today, you can become someone vastly different from the person you have been so far in this life, or the persons you have been in any other lifetimes that you have ever lived. Advanced Buddhist yoga is the art of altering your karmic patterns, Master Thwap continued. Through the practice of meditation, and with the auric empowerments and guidance of an enlightened master, you can totally change your karmic destiny. By practicing Buddhist yoga, you can become happy, ecstatic and free in your current incarnation, even if you have never been that way before in any of your past lives, or thus far in your current life. Believe me, this is true. If there wasn't a way around the samskaras, no one would ever become enlightened. Remember, Master Thwap said, lifting his hands in front of his chest to emphasize what he was saying, karma exists within causality. It is three-dimensional. Free will exists outside causality, it is not bound by karma. By exercising your free will, thinking happier thoughts, making happier choices, and by learning and following the Buddhist way, you can totally change your karma forever. You can reshape your spirit and become a new and more ecstatic being. I asked Master Thwap why we weren't all born knowing about our past lives. I reasoned out loud that if we all had lived before, we should simply remember our past lives from the moment we were born, in the same way that we remember something today that we experienced yesterday. He responded that most human beings who have been spiritually evolved in their past lives go through a stage he called unknowing, during which they experience a temporary state of spiritual amnesia. He told me that unknowing normally lasts from birth through adolescence. One day, Master Thwap said, a person who has attained advanced levels of mind in past lives begins to remember ... and spiritual knowledge and talents from past lives begin to resurface into the person's current self. As the memories and awareness from past lives flood into a person's current life, he continued, that person goes through a profound metamorphosis, and gains a totally different personality. During this metamorphosis, people usually lose interest in superficial things like possessions and relationships, and instead suddenly find themselves drawn to the study of the ancient, eternal and metaphysical truths. As they enter more deeply into this phase, they become calm, happy and centered, focused on the transcendental rather than the transitory. When a person who has had highly evolved past lives is going through a strong past life transit, and is pulling up other life memory from those prior lifetimes, that person comes to know things about life, death and other dimensions that most people in our world aren't aware of. Very often while this is happening, the person also rapidly regains and begins to employ past life psychic powers, and to do things with them that defy description. After a period of silence, Master Fuap told me that most people who have been enlightened in their previous incarnations would normally begin to regain their past life enlightenment, if they lived at sea level, at around the age of 29, when their astrological Saturn return took place. He said that living in or near sacred mountains, because of their beneficial auric influences, often made past life returns happen even faster. Chapter 7, Very Short One. I ask a question. I asked Master Fuap how he could be so sure that all of this was true. How did he know that it wasn't all just fantasy? He told me that he could see everything he had told me was true because his third eye was open. He said someday, after practicing meditation for many years, my third eye would also open, and then I would be able to see anything in the universe I wanted to, just as he could. Chapter 8, The Secret of the Ray Quartz Fuzz. That afternoon, while I was seated on the yak hair rug in his small but comfortable room, Master Fuap told me the secret of the Ray Quartz Fuzz. It wasn't exactly a secret, like something you keep hidden from others. Instead, it was more like the secret of how something works, for instance, the secret of how a jet plane flies. Master Fuap told me that the secret of the Ray Quartz Fuzz concerned their special meditation techniques for attaining enlightenment extremely rapidly. He said the Ray Quartz Fuzz had preserved and passed on their secret meditation techniques in oral tradition from the time of Atlantis until the present day. And that is where the real story of the Ray Quartz Fuzz, Fuzz Shastra Dup, Master Fuap's master, Master Fuap, myself and you, the reader of my Himalayan adventures that occurred when I was a young man, begins to get just a little bit cosmically complicated. According to Master Fuap, the Ray Quartz Fuzz was a mystery school, a school where the mysteries of the universe were taught. Master Fuap patiently explained to me that a mystery school is an occult order comprised of people who study meditation, enlightenment and psychic and occult arts. Master Fuap told me that the Ray Quartz Fuzz had been in existence for millennia. He explained that the members of the order traced their origins back through Tibet, Japan, China, India and ancient Egypt to the place where the order was founded, the lost continent of Atlantis. Master Fuap recounted that long before the advent of what the scientists and scholars of our day consider to be the beginning of human civilization, there was an age undreamed of, the Age of Atlantis. Atlantis, according to Master Fuap, was a highly evolved civilization where the sciences and arts were far more advanced than one might expect. He told me that, in addition to being technically advanced in genetic engineering, computer science and interdimensional physics, and artistically developed in electronic music and crystal art forms, almost all of the people who lived in Atlantis meditated and had powerful psychic skills. Master Fuap further explained that a group of highly evolved Atlantean men and women, the high priests and priestesses of Atlantis, had discovered, through their meditation practices, many of the deepest secrets of the universe. Through meditation and astral travel they had come to understand all about reincarnation, karma and the innermost workings of the enlightenment cycle. In a hushed voice, Master Fuap recounted how, in their meditations, the high priests and priestesses of Atlantis had seen that the Atlantean civilization was going to end cataclysmically. He said that, knowing the imminent destruction of Atlantis was rapidly approaching, the high priests and priestesses wanted to preserve and protect the mystical knowledge they had gained from their meditation practices and pass it on to future civilizations they clairvoyantly saw were going to be born after the destruction of Atlantis. Because the high priests and priestesses of Atlantis could see through their third eyes, Master Fuap explained, they knew exactly when and how their continent was going to be destroyed. The night before Atlantis sank beneath the waves forever, the members of the mystery school set sail from their doomed continent in 12 boats, headed for 12 different points on the globe. Master Fuap told me it was their intention to start 12 new civilizations similar to Atlantis in these locations. Unfortunately, Master Fuap said nostalgically, half the boats, along with their passengers and crews, were lost in a great storm at sea. The only group of Atlanteans that was truly successful in transplanting their knowledge to a new location, Master Fuap added, was the group that landed in what is now Egypt. Having established themselves in Egypt, he continued, they found and educated people there to whom they eventually transmitted their secret techniques and knowledge. At that point, I interrupted Master Fuap's chronicle of his mystical order, and inquired why all of this was necessary to begin with. I reasoned that even if all of the members of the Raycourts Fuas in Atlantis had died when their continent had sunk, or had been lost in small boats at sea afterwards, they would have soon reincarnated and remembered everything anyway. Master Fuap said that unfortunately past life remembrance wasn't quite that simple, and in order for me to properly understand why this was so, I needed a brief course in the Earth's energy cycles and auric patterning. Chapter 9, Master Fuap's brief course in the Earth's cycles and auric patterning. Everyone is psychic, Master Fuap declared with a broad smile. When your mind is clear and focused, and if there aren't too many people in your immediate vicinity, you can feel all kinds of wonderful things. You can feel the brightness of eternity and the ecstasy of creation. You can see the light of enlightenment inside everything. When your mind is clear and your third eye is open, you can see and know things that are taking place thousands of miles away from you. You can know what other people are thinking about you, or what is coming at you, and decide whether or not you want to experience it. During the time of Atlantis, members of the Mystery School discovered and developed specific concentration exercises that they found would radically increase and sharpen their innate psychic abilities. These techniques, when properly employed, allowed them to control and suspend their thought processes for prolonged periods of time. Master Fuap then explained to me that by suspending thought for prolonged periods, a practice that he and other modern-day Buddhist masters refer to as meditation, an individual can perceive and have direct experiences in countless non-physical worlds and dimensions. The members of the Atlantean Mystery School were the earliest human explorers of the frontiers of inner space, Master Fuap exclaimed jubilantly. Through their internal meditative journeys and explorations, they discovered many secret astral passageways that led to an infinite variety of other worlds and dimensions. Why, yes, of course they are, he replied. As a matter of fact, some of those dimensions are much more real than this universe is. I interrupted him again, but how can that be, Master Fuap? Nothing can be more real than the physical world. Isn't that what the word real means to begin with? Reality is perhaps a more complicated concept than you might imagine, he quickly replied. In our Eastern languages we have many different words to describe the varying degrees of reality that a thing, a state of mind or a plane of being may have. But I still don't see, Master Fuap, how one object or world can be more real than another, I protested. You are having trouble understanding this concept because you are thinking in English, Master Fuap said. The language you think in can limit your ability to understand something like this. What do you mean by that, Master Fuap? Now you are really confusing the issue by blaming it on semantics. I was beginning to get frustrated by my lack of understanding, and for some unknown reason I felt that Master Fuap was intentionally making his explanation more complicated and abstruse than was really necessary. Consider the word love as an example, Master Fuap calmly responded. Now, as you know, love is an emotion. In your English language you have just a single word for what is perhaps one of the most complex feelings in all of eternity. But there are thousands of types of love, aren't there? He continued. There is romantic love, family love, friendship, flirtation, parental love, the love of God and the Spirit, jealous and possessive love, selfless love, innocent love, multiple life love and so on. As a matter of fact, no two people ever experience love in exactly the same way. But in English you have just one word for something that is so complicated. In other languages, however, there are sometimes dozens or even hundreds of different words for the degrees and types of love that human beings can experience. But what does that have to do with different degrees of reality? I asked. Everything and nothing, Master Fuap responded at once. Don't allow yourself to get frustrated so easily. Give me a few more moments of your time, and I think you will understand what I mean. You see, my young friend, language is the medium of our thoughts. Thoughts can increase our understanding of a subject, or they can just as easily constrict or block our understanding of a subject. It very much depends upon the language that we are thinking in. If the language that we think in doesn't have the right words for what we are trying to understand or express, it's like trying to put a square peg into a round hole. So, he continued, if you have only one word for all the colors of love, then you may begin to think love instead of feeling it. You may take it for granted that when you think the word love, you already know and have experienced all of its possible permutations. Let me see if I understand you correctly, Master Fuap. In other words, when I think the word love in my mind, you are suggesting I have a concept for love that is based upon my past experiences and associations with love, and that this concept will stop me from experiencing other types of love, unless I have additional words at my disposal that define different gradations of love. Is that what you mean? Exactly. He replied with a broad smile. But if that is the case, Master Fuap, I continued, in a mock argumentative fashion, why would thinking the word love in any way curtail new and different feelings of love, as they would spontaneously arise within me? Wouldn't the new types of love I feel and experience for people, places and things modify and expand the meaning of the word love for me? At this point, I was getting a little bit giddy. Everything that had seemed so frustrating to me just moments before, had somehow suddenly taken on a comic tone. It seemed to me that Master Fuap and I were both taking part in a ludicrous mock debate, of absurd proportions, similar to Master Fuap's brief course in the Earth's cycles. Master Fuap's brief course in the Earth's cycles. Master Fuap, does thinking a word stop me from experiencing what the word describes? I asked. Yes and no, he replied. Which part is yes and which part is no? Do you know much about Zen Buddhism? Master Fuap inquired, with what I perceived to be a deceptively wry smile. No, not really. Tell me about it. It is the method of knowing the mind through its own emptiness. What does that mean, Master Fuap? Zen Buddhists believe that when we think about something conceptually, we cut ourselves off from its true essence. From a Zen point of view, it is only by going beyond our limited concept of something, and experiencing its suchness, or essential nature, that we really come to know what a thing, experience or understanding truly is. The Zen Buddhist monks use concentration techniques to rid themselves of concepts. They believe enlightenment lies just beyond words, in the things and experiences of daily life that are right in front of us at every moment. In short, according to Zen doctrine, happiness comes when we rid ourselves of the concepts that society, language and structured thinking have given us. There is an old Zen saying, Master Fuap continued. Before enlightenment, chop wood and carry water, after enlightenment, chop wood and carry water. Master Fuap paused and waited for me to respond. What does that mean? I hesitantly inquired. It means that enlightenment doesn't really change anything, yet it changes everything, or you might say that enlightenment changes everything without changing anything. Master Fuap, are you deliberately trying to confuse me? No, he replied with a good-natured laugh. I'm not deliberately trying to confuse you at all. Actually, I don't think that I have to. You've been doing a pretty good job of confusing yourself all your life. What does that phrase mean then? I don't understand it. It's a way of trying to explain what enlightenment is and isn't, Master Fuap responded. Most people who read about or study enlightenment have a preconceived notion of what enlightenment is. Naturally, that concept, like all concepts, is limited by the words that make it up. So this phrase explains that enlightenment is not a concept. Before enlightenment, Master Fuap continued, the Zen Buddhist monk chopped wood and carried water. After he became enlightened, he continued to chop wood and carry water. Most people assume, Master Fuap continued, that after they become enlightened, their outer lives will magically change. They imagine that they will suddenly dress in flowing robes, give up working, and spend their time sitting on top of a mountain meditating in bliss all day. Well, wouldn't you, Master Fwap? I mean, what good would enlightenment be if it didn't change your life? Isn't that why people seek enlightenment, to get away from the boredom and frustration of their daily experiences? Exactly, Master Fwap replied. That's what most people think. But that is not necessarily the case. You see, enlightenment allows you to perceive things differently. Perception is the key to everything. Before the Zen monk became enlightened, chopping wood and carrying water seemed like mundane, repetitious and boring tasks to him. But after he became enlightened, his perception of chopping wood and carrying water, and of everything else in life, radically changed. He discovered that enlightenment exists in chopping wood and carrying water, as much as it also does in sitting on top of a mountain and meditating all day. Before you become enlightened, Master Fwap continued patiently, the world appears to be three-dimensional, dull and boring. But in reality, the world is not three-dimensional, and if you are at all aware, it is anything but boring. Before he became enlightened, the monk's thoughts, concepts and mental routines blocked his perception of the infinite brightness that exists within all things. After his enlightenment, while the monk's body might still have been chopping wood and carrying water, his mind was constantly roaming through the ecstatic dimensions of light. So the point of the Zen phrase is that enlightenment is not what you think it is, because enlightenment is beyond the power of your thoughts and ability to understand. Once you have become enlightened, Master Fwap said dramatically, you don't have to live in a monastery, because the whole universe has become your monastery. You can lead a normal life doing whatever you choose. Physically, it might appear that nothing remarkable has changed in your day-to-day life. But within your mind, you will live in a condition of continuous light and ecstasy, just like the Zen monk. But Master Fwap, I still don't understand how some types of reality can be more real than others. Once you get beyond your conception of what reality is, Master Fwap said, you will transcend the words and concepts you have already developed for reality. It's really that easy, but as long as you continue to think life, instead of directly experiencing it in a non-conceptual way, you will not understand any more about reality than you do today. So, he remarked, let us forget for a few minutes that we have a preconceived understanding of what the word real means. Let's start from scratch, and through observation determine what is real and what is not. Let's find out, by directly examining life, if some things have more reality than other things. At that point in our discussion, Master Fwap paused. How would you define reality? What, in your opinion, makes something real? Well, I suppose something is real because it exists, I replied. But things don't exist, or if they do exist, they only exist for a fleeting moment. What do you mean by that, Master Fwap? Well, the only thing that exists is this moment, right here and now, Master Fwap said emphatically. There is no past. He continued, not past any given moment that is still taking place. The past, whether it was thousands of years ago or just a few seconds ago, only exists as an idea impression in our memory. So then, what is real isn't real for more than a fleeting moment. Is that what you are saying? I inquired. Exactly so, he swiftly replied. And to complicate matters even further, the reality of a thing depends entirely upon your perception of it, and your perception of an event lasts only for an instant before it fades into memory. Master Fwap, I think this is getting a little too metaphysical for me. I'm starting to get a headache, I said in a sudden outburst. Try thinking of it this way, he continued, ignoring my overly emotional statement. What makes something real to begin with is the fact that it exists. We both agree that when something doesn't exist, it isn't real. So suppose some things exist longer than other things do. Would you say that makes them more real? I suppose so, I reluctantly agreed. Enlightened Buddhist masters know that nothing in the physical or astral worlds exists for more than a moment at a time. But they also know that nirvana exists continuously, it is a constant. So therefore nirvana, which is enlightenment, is certainly more real than anything physical or astral, because it never ends. The only constant outside nirvana is change, Master Fwap continued. Nothing remains the same from one moment to the next, in this or any other dimension. You may think that things do, but that is a trick of your thoughts and conceptions. All things and beings are made up of vibrating energy. He continued. Nothing in the universe is really as solid as it looks. For example, an unenlightened person sees a tree as something solid and the universe is made up of endless dimensional planes, Master Fwap said strongly. Some planes are more durable than others, and of course nirvana is beyond change. So the closer a plane of being is to nirvana, in a way of speaking, the more real it is. Conversely, the further away from nirvana something is, the less real it is. But Master Fwap, I thought you said that nirvana wasn't spatial. It's not really a physical place, is it? If that is the case, then how can one dimension be closer to it, or another be farther from it? You are absolutely correct, Master Fwap swiftly responded. Nirvana is not spatial, not in the way that you mean, anyway. I know that, as frustrating as it may be for you, there is really no way to explain nirvana at all. Words are useless. Nirvana is something you have to experience directly in order to know it, Master Fwap elucidated. And nirvana is not something you can know directly, in the way you can know a person, know how to do something, or know and understand a concept. The knowing of nirvana is non-conceptual knowledge. He continued. That is why, in Buddhist philosophy, we say nirvana is the wisdom beyond the mind's knowing. We meditate and practice mindfulness to go beyond the limited concepts that keep us in relatively unreal states of mind, Master Fwap said with a twinkle in his eyes. Beyond the limited states of mind most human beings experience, there are more durable levels of perception that exist in the astral and the causal planes. When you experience these more real levels of perception, you will be happy all the time. So the members of the Atlantean Mystery School practiced meditation, and discovered there are varying degrees of reality in the universe. In addition, they also discovered that internal harmony directly affects a person's ability to perceive and experience enlightened states of consciousness. Master Fwap continues his narrative. In and through their internal study and metaphysical research, the members of the Mystery School discovered that there was a strong relationship between one's state of mind and one's level of psychic attainment. They found that an individual who wasn't happy, emotionally in control, balanced, funny and at peace with himself couldn't fully develop his innate psychic powers. The reason for this is deceptively simple, Master Fwap said with a laugh. All psychic and spiritual development is dependent upon an invisible internal energy called prana. Prana, which is sometimes also called kundalini or ki, is the energy of consciousness. The amount of prana that people store within themselves determines both their level of day-to-day awareness, and also their ability to use their psychic and occult powers. Prana is stored in an internal reservoir inside a person's subtle body, Master Fwap continued. Certain activities like meditating, visiting places of power, and being empowered by an enlightened master increase the amount of prana a person has. There are also ways of thinking, acting and feeling that quickly use up stored prana and unnecessarily waste it. The fastest ways to burn up and waste prana are to experience unhappiness, hate, anger, depression, self-pity and egotism. When people's lives are in a continual state of emotional and mental upheaval, Master Fwap explained, they lose almost all of their prana, even if they meditate and engage in other internal practices that increase their psychic energy level every day. Without the internal energy that stored prana provides, people cannot develop their higher psychic perceptions, let alone gain siddha powers and become enlightened. They observed that most individuals, without consciously realizing it, absorb a great deal of psychic energy from the people they casually associate with, and an even a greater amount of psychic energy from the people with whom they have strong emotional connections. The energies and mental states that we psychically pick up from the people we are emotionally close to or those with whom we physically interact build up on our subtle body, In much the same way the dirt builds up on our physical body during the course of a day. If these negative auric vibrations are not kept to a minimum by using psychic shielding techniques, and if they aren't cleansed from our subtle body each day through the practice of meditation, they will accumulate and eventually become extremely toxic.